Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Seasonal Tokens Podcast, where Polar interviews people so you can do more investing and less gambling.
Hello, everyone, and welcome on another episode of the Seasonal Tokens Podcast. I'm Polar, the CMO of Seasonal Tokens, and today we talk with Matthew about a topic that nobody wants to talk. We're talking about crypto taxes, but in a, let's say, more pleasurable way, or in a way that can help you to reduce your stress when we talk about crypto taxes. We discuss ways that you can go through to make your life easier and reduce the anxiety which comes when we talk about crypto taxes. But of course, it's a crypto investing podcast, so Matthew is going to share with you his crypto investing journey that hasn't been that fun. So enjoy. So Matthew, thank you very much again for accepting my invitation to join the podcast.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Perfect. So I think that this episode may be very beneficial for some, for other may sound a little bit scary, but as a whole, I think this is a topic that we can't stay away because it's very important. But before we go in detail, so can you introduce yourself and your background with a few words?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Matt Walrath, and I've been involved with crypto since back in, I believe it was 2016 or 17. I saw a friend had Blockfolio, one of the original tracking apps, open, and he's looking at these red and green candles, and I'm looking over his shoulder like, what are you doing, man? We're on a ski trip. Why are you glued to your phone? And yeah, he's actually the one who got me interested in crypto. And yeah, for a long time, I just would kind of bug him and ask him for crypto investing tips. Like, hey, man, what's the next 10 to 100X token that you've got on your radar? You know, the typical intro to crypto. And over time, now I've moved through being on the project side and involved with some DAOs. And yeah, ultimately, I've just been investing consistently in crypto for a long time. And now, as you kind of alluded to, there's a topic that might be useful, might be scary for some, that I've really dove deep into, and that topic's crypto taxes. And for anybody who is lucky enough to be in a place like Dubai, you don't really have to listen to what I say. But for everybody else, it can be scary. But yeah, I hope to bring some clarity as to how to make it a little bit less stressful and overwhelming.
Yeah, I think that people need some peace of mind when we talk about that, especially if they are really ready to jump into crypto investing in the long term. They'll have to find ways to somehow deal with taxes, but it's part of the process. Even millionaires pay some taxes, not much, but they still pay some. The story with your friend is really interesting, but I'm wondering, like, what has attracted you to crypto? Is this is it only the crypto investing side of things? Is it because of the community? Is it because there are a lot of opportunities to solve issues from the real world, or it is all that?
Yeah, so originally I was definitely attracted in by, you know, the candles, the investing side of things. I've always been very interested in investing, even in traditional markets. And once I found crypto, I was like, oh, wow, this is, you know, something where there's these moonshot plays. Why not essentially gamble? But the thing that really drew me in, where I wanted to do a deep dive rather than just bothering my friend and asking him what was on his radar that might make some money, was the advent of decentralized finance. So once DeFi came on the scene, for me, I had studied finance in college, and it was really interesting to see how what felt like a really antiquated and outdated system that had ultimately hurt a lot of people during the financial crisis. I was like, wow, all of a sudden, a lot of the services that they were providing have been moved onto the blockchain. You know, this thing that started with Bitcoin, which was born from the financial crisis. And I just thought that was so cool. And it really inspired me to start reading a lot of white papers and just playing with fire, you know, setting up MetaMask and playing with all these different decentralized protocols and some different blockchains other than just Ethereum. And it just felt like this wonderful and beautiful rabbit hole that I could start exploring. And so I came for the interest in DeFi, and I really stayed for the community around Web3 and crypto.
Nice, nice. So you mentioned that you have been studying financial in your university. Have you been in this space in your Web2 career, or you have gone in totally different direction?
Yeah, in a totally different direction. I started in the startup world when I finished up university. And so, yeah, I was involved in the business world, more boots on the ground, actually creating businesses rather than being a venture capitalist investing in them. But yeah, I had a little stint in the fitness industry. And then once I discovered crypto, it's really become the full-time thing. I've just found every way possible to make this my career path for now.
Okay, yeah. Sounds like the logical thing to do these days, I believe, or to be in AI, right? Because people are following trends. So it's part of the current progression of the world. So when you started your crypto investing journey, when was the time when you realized for the first time that, hey, maybe I'll have to do something with my crypto taxes, what I have to do with that?
Yeah, so pretty much from that kind of late 2016 through 2019, everything was pretty simple. You know, I would occasionally buy Bitcoin, Ethereum, or some of the original shit coins that my friend was pointing me towards. But for the most part, it was on Coinbase, or, you know, at the time I was like, oh, I don't really know how to, I don't know if the government's going to look at my MetaMask, so I won't worry about that. Ultimately, I've had to amend that, but it was easy. It was just like, oh, hey, I told my accountant, you know, I bought Bitcoin, I bought Ethereum, I put this much in, I didn't sell anything. They're like, cool. There's nothing to worry about. And then all of a sudden, 2020 came, and, you know, using protocols like Yearn Finance and moving on to exotic things like Binance Smart Chain, where you've got all these food-based tokens and rug pulls and just all this crazy stuff. All of a sudden, I had like over 1,000 transactions when prior I had maybe, you know, dollar cost average once a month, once a week into Bitcoin was the majority of my crypto investing. So it was this oh shit kind of moment where my accountant had no idea how to help me deal with my crypto taxes. They were pretty much like, maybe we should just look at what you put in and what you took out, and we'll just do that. I was like, oh, that really doesn't seem right. And it seems like I'm gonna end up paying more in taxes than I owe. So yeah, that's when the situation got pretty crazy, is when I had been minting NFTs and, you know, yield farming and, you know, using exotic blockchains and doing cross-chain bridging. It was just like, how do I deal with this? My accountant can't help me deal with this. And, you know, as we can get into, I just found that, especially at the time, the crypto tax softwares, they were pretty useless as well. And yeah, I really had to go on this journey of figuring it out for myself, because I knew I wasn't the only one with that problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I still believe that there are many people that have your problems. I don't know. And I am, I don't know, but I suspect that what is needed to do in your country is different from other countries like United States, like in Europe, like in South Africa, and so on. So I suppose there are still a lot of people having troubles with their crypto taxes. But before we talk about the solution, what do you think are some of the most common myths about crypto taxes that people have in their minds?
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't even know what to think when it comes to crypto taxes. But I think one of the common things I see is that people think that you at least in the US and some of the Commonwealth nations, I think you only get taxed when you take money from crypto to fiat. But in most countries, when you go from crypto to another crypto, if you trade Bitcoin for Ethereum or Ethereum for, you know, any host of shitcoins, that's actually a taxable event in most countries. And a lot of people think it only incurs tax if you turn it into fiat. That's one of the things that I see, especially with a lot of my clients, that they are kind of caught by surprise. They're like, I didn't take that much out into my bank. And so that's a huge one where I think it's worth learning what are the capital gains tax laws, or especially the income tax laws around crypto in your country, because a lot of countries, people get blindsided by the fact that they actually have to pay income tax on yield farming rewards and airdrops and a lot of these things. And so I find that those are some of the common things that people seem to be confused about or have misconceptions about. And the other thing is, you know, I've seen a lot of people who think, oh, my accountant will just figure it out for me, or, you know, I'll just plug this into a crypto tax software and it'll do all the work for me. But, you know, unfortunately, there's very few accountants out there. There are some, but there's very few who have actually taken the time to understand some of the more nuanced things that can happen within the crypto space. And the crypto tax software is, you know, it's no knock on them. It's a really difficult thing. There's so many new smart contracts that come out all the time that it's really difficult for them to create one software that's going to be able to interpret every single smart contract that's coming out. Like, sure, there's a lot of things being forked and they're doing a pretty good job of getting a lot of those, you know, kind of like beefy finance auto compounder forks. They're starting to be better about those. But yeah, some of the more exotic stuff, you know, it's a fast moving space and it's hard for these tax softwares to stay all the way on the cutting edge of it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's impossible, I believe, for a software to constantly catch up with the changes in the crypto. Like, projects are changing dynamically. At the same time, so many projects are starting their journey in the crypto world. So I suppose it's totally understandable for softwares to not be able to be completely up to date. But at the same time, you are saying that crypto tax software doesn't work, but should you still use it, or you should do all manually?
Yeah, so I think that it is an amazing tool and I recommend using it. I personally, you know, use crypto tax software and I use it with all my clients. And even though it doesn't work, it's just important to have the right expectations about what it does and what it's good at and how you can use it. So it doesn't work in the sense that you just, you know, plug in your wallets or link up your exchange APIs and it tells you exactly how much you owe. Because most of the time, you know, they're kind of biasing towards, they want to make sure that you're the most compliant with the tax laws in your country. So they're more likely to overstate your gains than to understate them. And so the tax software, what it's really good for versus trying to manually do your crypto taxes is it just pulls all the data in for you. You know, you sync your exchange accounts. You can just put your public address for your crypto wallets. You don't have to, you know, give private keys or anything compromising. And it just pulls the data in from the blockchains. And then you have all of your transactions there without having to manually do anything more than link your exchanges and link your wallets. So it's like you just put a little bit of work in up front. And then all of a sudden, it's pulling all that data in. And that's really handy because back when I was just dollar cost averaging into Bitcoin, it was easy to keep a spreadsheet. You know, I bought, I sold, whatever, you know, I could give that to my accountant and they could track the cost basis and the capital gains. But then once you start accumulating a lot of transactions, it's really useful to have that software to pull that all in and organize it. The other thing that's really nice is for basic transactions. So if you just swapped some of the large cap tokens or pretty much anything that has a coin market cap price feed, if you just swap that on Uniswap or PancakeSwap or some of the bigger exchanges on some of the more well-established blockchains, it's going to be able to match those up for the most part. Same with, you know, if you're just trading with Binance, Coinbase, whatever the centralized exchanges you use, it's really good at automatically categorizing a lot of those really basic transactions. But the problem is it just doesn't take you all the way to the finish line. You have to go in and actually do a little bit of a manual review process and find those transactions that the software can't really keep up with. A lot of times it's adding liquidity, removing liquidity from DEXs, you know, putting liquidity pool tokens into yield farms, minting NFTs, you know, any transaction where you essentially buy multiple NFTs at once. There's staking tokens. It's really difficult, especially when you're interacting with smart contracts, for the tax software to interpret what that smart contract is. And so, you know, that's where the manual work comes in, but the software automates enough of it that it unloads an unnecessary amount of the work on you. So you just, instead of focusing on, you know, typing every transaction and the gas fees and the dates and all that, you know, and what the, you know, fiat value of the tokens is into a spreadsheet, which is a crazy amount of record keeping if you're doing thousands of transactions. It's like you just get to offload that. And that's that way, you know, even though you have to put some effort into that manual review process, you don't have all this other crap that you have to spend time, effort, and energy on. You know, the software just does it for you. And, you know, some of the ones that I've tested out, they're pretty fairly priced, and they often will run discounts around tax time. So you can usually get them for quite a fair price.
Nice, nice. But it still sounds a little bit scary. And not very much effortless, I would say. So you said that you have to do this manual work. Does this mean that you have to continue doing some sort of spreadsheets, putting all this information from your manual findings, or you have to use, for example, another software for that?
Yeah, so it just depends on what your workflow looks like. So there's kind of some phases that I see people having to go through with this. A lot of times it starts with what I call the archaeological dig, where you just got to go digging back into prehistoric times and uncovering what kind of crazy transactions you might have been doing 12 months, you know, 24 months ago, because I know a lot of people haven't really gotten a handle on this in the past. So that's one of the most kind of time-intensive things that you have to do, but it's really important. For a number of reasons, which I can share in a bit, but you, just to give a quick overview, it's like you go through and do the archaeological dig. That takes some time, it takes some effort, and takes some energy. But once you get all of your transactions labeled up to the present, what I end up doing personally is I'll just keep, I've actually got a whiteboard next to where I do any transactions, and I'll just write down what I was doing. And then every month, I'll just go back into the software and I'll make sure to label those transactions. And so when I'm only looking back 1 month, it's actually not a big deal. You know, looking back a month, I'm like, I remember what I was doing a month ago. But when you got to think 24 months back, it's like, what the heck was I doing? What is that smart contract? Like, where did that money go? And so, once you get up to date, it becomes a lot easier. And I find that, you know, it can be as simple as having a notepad and just writing down what you're doing. And then once a month, categorizing that in the software, you know, if you really want to, every time you make a trade, you can go label it in the software. But, you know, it just depends on what type of workflow works best for you. But yeah, kind of staying up to date with it instead of getting behind can make a big difference in terms of it not being so scary.
Yeah, absolutely. Like always, and like in the real world, prophylaxis is much better than curing, right? If we can say that what you are doing is some sort of prophylaxis, and looking for 24 months back is like curing the problem of not having all the transaction. So it's always the case. And do you have any other tips or strategies that people can use to reduce their stress and anxiety around crypto taxes?
Yeah, I would say don't wait until, you know, a week before your country's tax deadline. I had a lot of people who told me, you know, a week before their deadline, they're like, hey, can you help me with my crypto taxes? And I'm like, oh man, you really waited till last minute. They're like, ah, I tried to do it on my own. I started, you know, last weekend and I just couldn't figure it out. Now I'm freaking out. And I'm like, that's a huge thing that I tell people now is just don't wait until last minute because, you know, sure. I know most people when they're in school, they wait until last minute to get their homework done or cram for the test. But, think about the anxiety and stress that you had while you were doing that. Is that really something you want to carry on in life? And I know at least for me, I don't want to. So, you know, if you take a look at when your tax deadline is, just setting aside some time and recognizing that it's going to take a little bit of time. You know, once you set up the software, depending on how many transactions you have, it'll take a little bit of time for you to go through them and to go through the learning curve of knowing how to properly categorize the transactions and how to use the tax software. After you do it for the first time, it becomes a little bit easier. But you're doing it for the first time, definitely just don't wait until last minute. And give yourself enough time to actually learn this and do this so that you're not freaking out about whether or not you're going to be in trouble with your tax office.
Yeah, it's very stressful time of the year when you have to file your taxes, that's for sure. And I'm also guilty for doing my homework in the last minute and also studying for my exams in the university in the last week and having fun in the other time. So yeah, I know what it means to be stressed, and it's not a good thing to be that much stressed. So are these things that you just mentioned as a process the best way to actually legally reduce your crypto tax bills, or you can do something else to pay less?
Yeah, so generally, what you can do to pay less is going to vary country to country. So I live in Australia, but I'm from the United States. And being from the US, that means I have the great pleasure of my IRS saying you owe us taxes no matter where you live, even if you don't live here anymore, which I don't. And so I get to file my taxes twice a year. Woohoo! So for me, I've had to do a lot to figure out for my specific situation, like how do I make sure that I'm paying the least amount that I legally can, given the fact that there's two tax offices breathing down my throat, wanting to get their pound of flesh. And it's really just helped me learn that there are a lot of things that you can do in terms of proper entity structure. So, you know, in some countries and even in some, you know, provinces or states, it might actually make sense if you have a lot of income or a lot of capital gains from crypto or you're actively trading, it might actually make sense to consult a tax lawyer or an accountant and figure out what's the best entity structure for me. So just an example, if you lived in Australia, you know, so for me, if I was yield farming, I have to pay income tax on all my yield farming rewards. And if I was a high income earner, I might have to pay, you know, let's say I have my job and then the yield farming income is on top of it. I might be paying the top tax bracket on my yield farming rewards. That might be like 30 to 40% tax. Whereas if all of my yield farming happens in a company, the corporate tax rate is 25%. It's capped at 25%. So then I might, you know, if I put it into a company, I'm only getting taxed 25%. I keep 75% and I can keep investing and compounding that over time. So I have 75% of my income compounding over time because I have a lower tax rate. Whereas if I'm doing it personally, I have a higher tax rate. And then maybe only 60% or 70% is compounding over time. So that's one of the things where sometimes the best first step is to figure out for your specific trading strategy, what's the best entity setup, as well as potentially what's the best cost basis setup. And the cost basis for a lot of countries is how your capital gains is determined. So there's a few different ways I've seen country to country. It's very different. One of the most common ones that most countries will use and most investors will use is called FIFO, first in, first out. So if I am dollar cost averaging and I buy $100 of Bitcoin every week, but then on the 10th week I sell some Bitcoin, well, the capital gains would be on the first $100 of Bitcoin that I bought. So if I bought $100 worth of Bitcoin today, and then it doubles 10 weeks from now to $200, and I sell $200 worth in 10 weeks, my cost basis was 100. I bought it at 100, and then I sold it at 200. And so I have a $100 capital gain. And there's actually some other cost basis calculation methods where if you're a more active trader, those cost basis methods might actually treat you better, because a lot of countries, your capital gains tax depends on how long have you held it. A lot of them, they'll have a long-term capital gains discount. So if you've held on to something for 12 months, you might get, you know, half the tax rate on that capital gains. And that can save you a ton of money. You know, you end up paying twice as much tax if you're actively trading. So if you're actively trading, you might choose a cost basis calculation method that just biases for making sure that, you know, like highest in, first out is a pretty popular one I've seen with more of the high frequency traders I've worked with. Whereas for people who are more hodlers, you know, first in, first out, if you hold things for a long time and get into that long-term capital gains territory, you know, FIFO might be the one for you. So talking to your accountant and sharing with them a little bit about your investing strategy and trying to figure out which of those cost basis calculation methods, those are some of the like home run things you can do. You know, the entity selection, getting the right cost basis calculation. I had one client who, you know, just going from FIFO to highest in, first out, first in to highest in, they went from having like a $2 million capital gain to like a $1.2 million just with that change, which was crazy. So yeah, it can make a huge difference. And I like to think in terms of, what's the home run play that you can make? And then, of course, going in and manually categorizing everything properly, that might not like save you money on taxes per se, but it's going to make sure that you don't overpay on your taxes. So it'll make sure that you just are paying what you owe. And then these other things can then potentially lower your taxes from there. And the final thing that can help you lower your taxes is just by doing that manual process and by knowing what's my cost basis for each of the tokens that I own. Do I have any unrealized losses? So you might be looking at like, oh, I put, you know, $1,000 into, you know, shitcoin, dog, whatever, and now it's worth 10 bucks. You might think it's not worth the gas fee on the Ethereum network to sell that thing because it's going to cost me more in gas than I'm going to get back. But actually, you would have a $900 capital loss that you could end up locking in. So by knowing your cost basis and your unrealized loss in real time, if you see that you have a bigger capital gain than you feel comfortable paying, but you also see that there's some tokens that, you know, might have rugged, or the, you know, developer abandoned the project or whatever. If you don't believe in the project anymore, you could potentially sell those tokens, lock in, take that unrealized loss into a realized loss, and then that can actually save you a lot of money potentially as well. So I'd say that those are some of the biggest ways I've seen people save money on their taxes in more of like a home run kind of way.
Yeah, I think that these are very, very valuable tips, and I'm hearing them for the first time, I would say. I have read some of them here and there, but definitely you're the first person that is explaining them in so much detail, and I think it's very clear what you should do. So these are the good things that you can do, but at the same time, most of the people are doing the bad things, the mistakes. So what do you think are some of the most common or top mistakes that people are doing with their crypto taxes?
Yeah, so one thing that comes to mind is I've seen a lot of people will try to hide wallets. They'll be like, oh, I'm gonna hide this wallet. I'm not going to claim the trades that I've done in it. And sometimes that works in people's favor. But I've actually seen that the majority of the time when a client comes to me and I'm doing their transactions and I'm looking and I'm like, man, you've been sending a lot of crypto to, you know, OX, you know, ABCD1234 wallet. Like, what's the deal with that? And they're like, oh, you know, that was a wallet that I just didn't want to claim. And I'm like, well, unfortunately, every time you sent crypto to it, that's seen as a disposal. And a disposal is in most countries a taxable event. So unfortunately, it's like, you know, you bought that Ethereum back in, you know, 2018, and now it's worth a ton of money, and you sent it to this secret wallet, and you just locked in a pretty big capital gain for yourself. You know, if we just claim that wallet and we put it into the crypto tax software, you're going to eliminate that entire gain. Sure, you've got more transactions on the record, but, you know, it ends up saving people money in most instances. So sometimes trying to be sneaky doesn't actually pay off. And I find that that's a mistake that a lot of people end up making, is, you know, thinking that if I hide this wallet, if I hide these transactions from the tax office, I'll save money. But actually, the way that taxes work, it ends up costing them if that's the route that they decide to go. Mm-hmm. So I know, you know, like I said, I was guilty of that too. When I first started a MetaMask wallet, I was like, the government will never find this. How are they going to know that, you know, OX, whatever is tied to me? And then I realized, I guess if you're sending money from Coinbase somewhere, then there's a little bit of a paper trail.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing with a blockchain. The trails are staying. They can't be removed. So yeah, you have to take care of that so you don't have troubles. So before we switch the topic a little bit to, I suppose, something more pleasurable to people, which is crypto investing, yeah, like the like making millionaires overnight and things like that. What's the number one thing that you would want the younger Matthew to know about crypto?
I think I could have saved myself a lot of stress and overwhelm if I had just kept better records and got started earlier with my crypto taxes, because I had to file an extension on my taxes for the 2020 tax year, that year that I had done all the crazy DeFi and NFTs and all that for the first time. And it was just a really stressful period. So I would go back and be like, hey, it's not going to be as easy as you think to get your crypto taxes done. And I would just go back and be like, download this crypto tax software, make sure that every month you're going back and categorizing your transactions, and stop doing so many freaking transactions. Because I think that 2020 and 2021, I was like, you know, harvesting my yield farms and compounding it and putting it back in almost every day. And man, did I rack up a lot of transactions, and holy crap, was that an absolute nightmare to go back and categorize all that.
Yeah, curing is always difficult and more expensive in all aspects, money, time, and effort. So it makes sense to do the things when the time has not passed, but it is currently in it's currently the time to do that, not to move it for the future. So you said that somehow your investment journey has started by chasing your friend and trying to get as much tips as possible, as many tips as possible from him. So was your crypto investing journey very bumpy so far with a lot of obstacles, or it was smooth like a butter?
Oh, bumpy. Very, very bumpy. Yeah, I think like everybody, you know, maybe not everybody, but I think a lot of people in 2017 and 18 got caught up in that euphoria of such a massive bull run. And yeah, I definitely got caught up in that. And I'm glad that I did, because I didn't have so much money invested at the time. Like, sure, it, you know, the amount of money I invested, what it was worth, the unrealized gains, I was like, wow, I'm rich. And then, you know, I didn't take any profits and I rode that thing all the way down. So, you know, I'm glad that I learned those lessons and realized that, oh, actually it's okay to take profits, and maybe I need to have a profit taking strategy. And so I kind of learned that going into the 2020 through 21 bull run. And I realized, oh, wow, like if I take profits and, you know, put it into, if I have somewhere to put my profits, I end up keeping my gains. This is fantastic. I absolutely love this. Unfortunately, I kept some of my gains in Anchor Protocol. So Yeah, I learned that stable doesn't always mean stable, which is a lesson I'm glad I learned, because luckily I didn't have that much in there that, you know, the Anchor protocol and the Celsius meltdown and all those things really hurt too bad. You know, I've found that one of the biggest lessons that I've learned in my investing career is you just don't want to get wiped out. Like it's really difficult to recover from losing all of your capital. So I always try to implement pretty rigorous controls in terms of, you know, somehow creating a stop loss, whether that's with, you know, the position size or the amount that I allocate to a position, or kind of spreading things out so that they're not all concentrated into one protocol where if it gets hacked, I'm wiped out. I feel like, you know, Those are some really important lessons that I learned by actually getting hurt and getting burned and getting rug pulled. But luckily, my position size wasn't so big that it took me out of the game completely. And some of those parabolic gains that we've seen in bull runs past, they paid for those mistakes. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing when somehow your mistakes are paid from some of your other activities. And that's why it's very important to diversify and not to be completely invested in one project or two projects, for example. So, like you said, you have been involved in the crypto community for some time, and you have been talking with many people about crypto investing and crypto taxes, of course. But what do you think people struggle with the most when we talk about crypto investing?
Yeah, I think that a lot of people, especially when they get in early, don't know how to spot a scam. And I know that that was the case for me as well. And it's really easy to get just that euphoria around like, oh my gosh, this is such an amazing money-making opportunity. And yeah, just overextending yourself. I think, especially as a new crypto investor, it's really easy to lose your ass, whether that's from getting scammed through phishing, from having bad cybersecurity, from, you know, a whole host of things. I think, for the new crypto investor, understanding how to make sure that you don't get completely wiped out is really important. And a huge part of that is obviously, you know, security, whether that's cybersecurity or just understanding, you know, how social engineering works and, you know, taking steps to mitigate all that. And then, you know, once you've got that in place, it comes down to proper risk controls, I think, is something that is such an important piece of the equation. But, you know, aside from that, yeah, how to spot a scam. I spend a lot of time studying all the scams that have happened in crypto, and now it's really easy to see the patterns emerge. And if you can control your emotions and not get too wrapped up in the euphoria of how amazing an opportunity is, it's a little bit easier to protect yourself, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. But it takes time. It costs money. And we don't want to go through this process. We are lazy. So it's great that you have spent so much time researching these scams. And I suppose this has definitely affected the way you are doing your own research, that this favorite phrase in the crypto space. So can you share more about your process of doing of your own research?
Yeah. So for me, when I first got started, what was really helpful was to go and read white papers. And they can sometimes be a little bit confusing or technical, but they give you some really good starting points for what do I need to learn more about. You know, when I was reading things, I would be like, what the heck's an AMM? And I'd look it up and learn what an automated market maker was and go from there. And so I think that, you know, doing your own research, going and reading some white papers is really useful. I think that a big thing as well is taking a look at the tokenomics of, you know, if you're investing into a fungible token, looking at the tokenomics and being like, okay, what are the potential risks that come with these tokenomics? Like, for example, most of the reward tokens for decentralized exchanges, they're inflationary. You know, a lot of people wanted to move away from inflationary fiat currency. And so with them being inflationary, you take a look at what are the potential risks to this project. And I know, you know, especially in Binance Smart Chain in kind of early 2021, late 2020, a lot of the scams were just people who would fork, you know, PancakeSwap or I think Goose DeFi was one. They would just fork those projects and have super high emissions, and it would attract in a bunch of people who were like, oh my gosh, 5,000% APY. And then it just became a matter of, all right, when's the liquidity going to be pulled here? You know, when is the scam going to take place? And yeah, I think once you realize as well, like that if you're getting 1% return per day, that's not sustainable, because within like a year, you would end up having, you know, more than the entire money supply of the world. If you invested just like $100, then that's a pretty clear sign that if you want to invest in it, like be careful, you know, and just have an exit plan, because obviously those types of returns aren't going to be sustained forever. And so, you know, kind of having a plan of like, what are the risk factors? When might this project go downhill because they're just inflating their token supply straight into the ground? And when is the APY that I can get from yield farming it not gonna justify how much the token price is gonna drop?
Yeah, I think that most of us that have started years ago are guilty in jumping in such opportunities, but opportunities is definitely not the right word, I would say. But let's say in this very well packed and looking scams. So I suppose the future of better scams and rug pulls is coming, because rug pulls and scammers know that this doesn't work that much like before. It still works, I believe, but it doesn't work like before, where everybody is jumping in something like that because it's trendy. So it's some sort of gambling, and it's still some sort of gambling in crypto, right? Because it's still a very new investment asset, and there are a lot of uncertainties around it. But I somehow believe that there are ways to tackle that and to do more investing rather than gambling. So what are your thoughts about that? How a person can do more investing rather than gambling in crypto?
Yeah, I think that a huge part of that comes down to your motivations and your emotions when it comes to investing. Like I mentioned before, if you're gambling, like, you know, it's just like, oh, it might be fun gambling. It's like, I don't know, some people go to the gas station and they get a scratch-off lottery ticket. And it's like, oh, whatever, you know, that was only $3. It's not like I completely lost everything. And, you know, they get some type of satisfaction out of it. But then when you are, you know, going to the casino and you're putting it all on red, you know, that's when you all of a sudden are doing something unhealthy. You have a chance of getting completely wiped out. And I think anytime you open yourself up to potentially getting completely wiped out, then that's when you're gambling. That's and I mean, I've been there. Like, I've done super stupid stuff in the past, and luckily I only got like a, you know, first degree burn. But then, you know, I haven't had to go through any third degree burns where, you know, I'm recovering from it and licking my wounds for years to come. And part of that comes from just understanding position sizing. You know, I've been lucky enough to have some education in traditional finance and to understand how some of those folks think. And I know that especially in the crypto world, you know, people like that are seen as being the enemy, but there's some amazing investment thinkers out there who, you know, even though their opinions of crypto might not be positive, I think we can still learn a lot from the way that they think. You know, like Warren Buffett, for example, Charlie Munger, two people who are super, like, they would never buy crypto. But when you understand the way that they think, it makes absolute sense why they wouldn't buy crypto. And even though they say negative things about crypto, you know, the way that they think and the returns that they've managed to get over time, it's like there's knowledge to be gained there. So I definitely think that sometimes people throw the baby out with the bathwater. You know, they won't listen to people like Nassim Taleb because, you know, he wrote the Bitcoin black paper, or, you know, they won't listen to people who are, you know, in traditional finance because, you know, they're old school and they're about to get left behind by this new system that, you know, we're creating here in crypto and Web3. But, you know, there's definitely some people who it's worth studying. Robert O'Thorpe being another. There's just so many people who I feel like if you study the way that they think, you can start moving towards more of a investor mindset rather than gambling. One of the things that really helped me was, okay, you know, I might be able to jump into this crypto project and maybe I'll get out with a profit before, you know, everything comes tumbling down. But if I repeated that decision thousands of times, you know, would my expected value over 1,000 times trying that be a positive return or a negative return? And so that really helps me. It's like, oh, if I'm going to make a decision, like, okay, if I repeated this decision 1,000 times, what do I think the expected outcome would be? Like, on balance, would I be hurting myself or helping myself? And that can be a good decision-making framework as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The learning from others is very, very important, especially those that have been a lot more time than you in the area that you are looking to grow. And of course, you have to be sure that they are successful, I would say, before you try learning what they are doing. Even though I also believe that there is something that you can learn from the biggest losers in the world too, if you analyze mm-hmm. their mistakes very well. But by doing the same things that they're currently doing, there is a very small chance for you to succeed and achieve a different result than the one that they're getting. So it's still possible to learn from everyone, but you have to first know what are the what is the world around this person? Is it positive? Is it negative? So you can change your perspective when you are analyzing. In all cases, Matteo, it was an amazing pleasure to have you here. And thank you very much for explaining this very pleasurable world of crypto taxes to our listeners.
Yeah, hopefully I didn't turn everybody off and create an angry mob that's going to show up at my doorstep.
Yeah, I'll make sure not to post your address so you don't have any troubles like that.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Perfect. I think you did a great clear explanation what are crypto taxes, and it's up to everyone to decide if they want to go through the easy way or to the very bumpy and stressful way of forgetting about taxes, not doing your taxes, faking your taxes, or doing some other things like that. But like I said, I think you did a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So thank you very much to all of our listeners that have been courageous enough to listen to us so far. I think you'll make it. You have higher chances than others because sometimes you have to hear the things that you don't want to hear so you can increase your chances of success. And if you enjoyed this episode and you want other great guests like Matteo, make sure to subscribe and share the episode with your friends. And make sure to tune in the next episode with me, Power, the CMO of Seasonal Tokens. And bye for now.